You're listening to FMGRadio.com.
Welcome to the Penelope Cox Show, the educator connector who's improving lives by connecting you to the premier educators teaching digital marketing today. And now, here's your host, Penelope Cox.
Hello, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host, Penelope, and our guest today is Warren Whitlock. Warren is a marketing strategist, speaker, social media expert, radio show host at Blog Talk Radio on the Social Media Profits Show. He is also a blogger, a publisher, a best-selling author, and a book marketing expert, and he does education and training for authors. He's co-authored two books, his first book, Twitter Revolution, How Social Media and Mobile Marketing is Changing the Way We Do Business and Marketing Online. His second book, Profitable Social Media, Business Results Without Playing Games. Warren Whitlock, you are a wealth of information, and I'm honored to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a nice introduction. I'll do my best to live up to that and find some profit for your listeners.
Well, I'm sure you will. We mentioned the couple of books that you've got out there, one on Twitter and one called Profitable Social Media. So I thought, well, gosh, why don't we just combine both worlds of Twitter and then the broader subject of social media? But more importantly, help our audience gain some insight into how they can make profits with all of their social media efforts. So first of all, when we talk about profitability, how are you defining profitable in terms of how it relates to your discussion of social media or in your two books?
We debated over whether to use the word profitable, and this is the question that, you know, actually it's the question that comes up quite often, because some people think of terms of social media as being social and not about business, and then they're the minority in a business audience, and other people think of it as being media and forgetting about the social. The term social media just is, I call it somewhat of a fad. We call the collection of tools we use online social media right now. Web 2.0 was really popular for a while before that. The one thing that's changed about business for everybody and is going to continue to change, it's why we called the other book Twitter Revolution. It really was a book about mobile marketing and the change that was coming with the tools, which is still, we're at the beginning of that revolution. And the big thing that's changed is we have two-way conversations instead of just broadcasting. So media, as you think about media, is where can I go send out my message? And if you're looking to do that using social media right now, buying ads on Facebook and using some other publicity venues and systems, not a bad thing. They're good media compared to the old media. And I always include blogs as being part of media. Boy, definitely should be part of your strategy to have a message that you can get out. But I like to go a little bit deeper about what profitable means, and think in terms of the lifetime value. And that's usually abbreviated LTV for those who know about it. Now, the number one answer I get when I ask somebody about their lifetime value of their customer is what? So let me explain briefly. And I've got a video on the website, or, you know, it's in some of my introductory products too, about what, how to calculate lifetime value. But but basically, if you take all the money you're ever going to make off of one customer, all the profit, and then, you know, so let's say you've got a customer that spends $100 a year for 5 years, that's $500, and you have cost of goods sold, let's say half, so it's $250. Well, now you've got a $250 lifetime value. And it's all done on average, and you use real numbers by taking the actual sales that you have, add up all the sales, divide by the number of customers you have, and that'll give you your average lifetime value of a customer. Some of the stuff about how many years to include, you get, there's a lot of discussions you can have about that, but suffice it to say you've got a feel for how much a customer's worth. So much of what small business does, and actually big business too, all business, what can I make right now? And try to make the money off of the transaction. And the most profitable companies and the businesses that go just do gangbusters year after year are ones that have a relationship with a customer. You know, obviously today Apple is at the lead of doing that. People expect good quality products from Apple, and you buy one and you're hooked. You got to buy another one. And so the value is more of how much they can make off of the current piece of hardware. If you buy an iPhone, you're going to be downloading things and paying more money to them. Another one that I think is a more classic definition of this is Disney. Not only do you know there's a certain level of quality with Disney, but they just know that, you know, you're going to love them, your kids are going to love them, your grandkids are going to love them, and it's just going to go on and on. They can just predict that. In fact, before there was video and home viewing, when the movies were just shown in the theaters, there's actually on the popular Disney movies a 7-year cycle, because they knew that every 7 years there'd be a group of, you know, under 10 kids that were fresh to go and you know, love seeing those same movies over and over again. Mm-hmm. Today, that's changed a little bit, but that's a classic example of them being able to count on the customer value being a lot more than how much they made off of that particular movie ticket. Mm-hmm. And so once you know that you have that kind of profit out of a customer and look at the lifetime value instead of how much off of this current transaction, it changes all of the math. Because if you have a $250 lifetime value to a customer and it costs you $100 to get them, well, let's figure it out. You know, how many times do you want to spend $100 and get $250 if it truly is your profit? And a lot of factors in there, you know, the world can change, the business can shut down, things like that. But that first transaction might even cost you money. Another classic example is magazine subscriptions. You know, and I'm going back to, say, the 70s and 80s when you subscribe to Sports Illustrated and get the football phone. They spent more money acquiring the customer than they could possibly make in the first year subscription. Mm-hmm. Of course, that allowed them to sell ads. Then they spent that much money again to get you for the second year, because they knew that once you subscribe for the second year that it was on autopilot and you were going to keep subscribing. So whatever your business is, whether or not it's, you know, haircuts or dry cleaning kind of a service, up to you're selling a car and want people to send their friends and family and come back to buy the next car, whatever it is you're selling, you got to think in terms of not making a relationship to get a sale, mm-hmm. but making a sale to start a relationship. And when you start thinking of things that time, the profitability changes abruptly. The other factor is how much does it cost to get that customer? Mm-hmm. In the old days, when we did direct marketing, we were looking at, well, let's try this. Let's, you know, write a letter and put it with a brochure and then put it in an envelope, put something on the envelope so it'll be open, maybe put in, some kind of trinket so the envelope is thick and somebody's got to figure out, well, is there a pin inside this envelope? Shall I open it? You know, and all of that. And you could be spending, you know, several dollars per piece, but also the setup got to be extremely expensive, where just to test a new concept, you could mm-hmm. be spending 5 or 6 figures just to test something. Today in social media, when I've got a new idea that I want to, you know, try a balloon, I'll tweet it. It's 140 characters, and part of it's the link. And I say something, and I find out what people respond to. And I know they respond to questions. They respond to things that will help them have a better life immediately. And just the odd and interesting in the news. And I know that if I get into a conversation about politics or, you know, the discussion about what really makes profit, this topic, that is something that we could go on and on about and bore people really easily. People care about simple things and simple messages and respond to them. And once they engage, they are there. And then, of course, the next thing from there is the fact that there are just so many people ready to buy that it doesn't make sense to cold call or to sell any ever again.
I picked that up when I was in real estate, the lifetime value of a client in real estate. And once I learned that on average a person moves every 5 to 7 years, solidifying that relationship was crucial in order to maintain, in order to leverage that relationship into lifetime
right.
value. And it's very important to know. When I went to your site, Profitable Social Media, I immediately saw the following, and this is almost a quote. Once you know you have something of value to offer, profiting from social media is simple. Number one, you create great content. Number two, you make it easy to share. Number three, listen and love, which I love. Explain this a little bit further in how these three elements help with profits in the social space.
The classic example that I learned this from that really got it crystal clear to me, because it's something I felt all along, that, you know, if you can get anything you want out of life if you help enough other people get what they want.
Right.
I actually was in a real estate office and heard that from Zig Ziglar many years ago. And, you know, and it really woke me up to the idea that you can do business the way that they told me to. You know, when I was a kid and I'd go to Sunday school, they'd say, live your religion all week long, not just on Sundays. And I thought, well, that's not what they're teaching me in college about business. You know,
yeah,
the dog eat dog world, and people are out to get you, and lots of popular books on that subject. And Winning Through Intimidation, one of my favorite books, which is not aptly titled, but that was a concept of winning through intimidation. You've got to intimidate the other person. And there's nothing to, I'm not putting down any of that. Some of that stuff is actually true. But at the same time, there's this concept that if you treat people decent, they're going to know, like, and trust you.
Correct.
First of all, they're going to, they have to know who you are. Then they're going to come to like you. Why wouldn't they like you? You're a likable, you're a nice person. They're going to like you unless you do something to breach their trust. Trust is built over time. You never want to breach the trust. So when you see some of these tricks, like the winning through intimidation kind of things, and again, not the book itself, because he ended up, he was a lot closer to this philosophy than not. When you start looking at those kind of things, you could do a trick and get a sale today.
Correct.
Like, you know, sticking your foot in the door, misleading headlines, bait and switch. It's not that stuff won't work. It's that you blow the trust. And when we're talking about lifetime value, you want to have the trust. The biggest thing you want to have coming out of the first sale with somebody is that they want to have the second sale. So, you know, with that attitude, I started studying a man named Edward Bernays. Bernays, it's B-E-R-N-A-Y-S.
Okay.
And he's one of the great marketing minds ever. He hated being called a marketer. He called himself a publicist. In fact, he coined the term public relations. He opened an office called the Council on Public Relations. That was, I believe, the first time that the term public relations was used. And he was a press agent. And what they did back then was called propaganda. And in fact, Bernays wrote a book in 1928 that was picked up by some not so nice people in Europe and kind of took over. You might have heard of them, the Nazis. And so ever since World War II, propaganda is not a popular term. So it's not a question of whether or not this can be good or evil. It can be. It's a tool, and it's a way of thinking. The one thing that he did that I really like, and I could go on for hours just telling you Bernays stories. Some of the stuff he did is just phenomenal. That people think they're coming up with new concepts for social media, and this man was doing it 80 years ago.
Right.
But let's get back to the one that I really like, and that's bacon and eggs. He needed to sell poultry. And so he found out that people weren't eating a good breakfast, and that it was, you know, and people should be eating a hearty breakfast. And he came up in the United States with the term that he popularized, bacon and eggs. Before 1929, that's not what was said. I talked to people from Europe and Asia. They eat bacon. They eat eggs. They don't eat bacon and eggs. They, in fact, quite often they call it eggs and bacon. In the United States, we are all conditioned to call it bacon and eggs, and it is basically an ad slogan. Though, again, you know, Bernays would never call what he did advertising. But he came up with that phrase, and the news releases that he put out at the time said, doctors recommend Americans eat a hearty breakfast, like bacon and egg. He emphasized the hearty breakfast instead of the bacon and egg. He also included eggs with bacon, because, you know, that made a tasty meal. And that applies to what we're doing today, because don't go on Facebook and say, eat more bacon. Go on Facebook and say, the doctors say that you ought to eat a hearty breakfast. Now, that particular message would have some problems with nitrates and what different we believe about health today.
Sure.
Remember, Bernays lived in the 1920s. The world has changed quite a bit since then. And again, we're not talking about whether or not he should have been promoting eating bacon. We're just talking about the method that he used. But so every time you see the phrase bacon and eggs, or say it, remember that somebody invented that slogan so that you would remember it. Once you have a phrase that's that easy, and you know, this is where you literally can spend millions of dollars developing a phrase like that. So most of the time when I talk about this, I'm saying, like, we're going to do it the poor man's way. We're going to come up with the easiest way to say it, and we're going to try a bunch of things. Uh-huh. And thank goodness we have tools like Twitter, where I can say something, and I can say eggs and bacon, bacon and eggs. I'll tell you, the one that's currently, as we speak, it's the banner above my my picture on Facebook, is a saying I came up with. Reality is just the most popular illusion. Let's not go off and talk about what all that means. But I said that in about 40 different ways until I found out that when I said it that way, people repeated it, retweeted it, and it got conversations going. And that's what I wanted. When I'm talking about that, that's the phrase I want people to be thinking about. But back to bacon and eggs, once you have that kind of a phrase, then the idea is to find today the people that are the thought leaders, the mm-hmm. centers of networks. You know, in any network diagram where they put a node for every person in the network, right, and then draw a line for who interacts with who, there's always some super nodes, some people where everybody goes through them. Those are the people you're looking for. That, today, that can be bloggers. That can be people that have a whole lot of followers on Twitter or Facebook, but maybe not. Maybe they just have the right followers. So not necessarily a quantity of numbers, but it's the people who are most often talking. Is you're in the bacon and egg business, who talks about breakfast?
Right.
I just barely, before coming on this call to do this interview, I was talking to somebody that had a new piece of pool equipment, and we were talking about ways and how would you get a new piece of pool, swimming pool equipment. Mm-hmm. Would the contractors want to do it? Would the people that repair the pools and who are the thought leaders? And within just about 10 minutes of brainstorming, we had a list of potential groups of people that are probably already meeting online and discussing pools. I'm not one of those. So I'd have to do a little bit more research, but he's not a client yet. So, you know, if he was my client, I'd go off and I'd find a list of people, and we would come up with, hundreds that we thought were the top, or 1,000 of people that were talking about pools, and then interact with them. Mm-hmm. The cost today is so cheap that we get to the third point, in that post I said listen and love, but usually as I teach this, what I'm saying is where serendipity kicks in. And in the book, we called it serendipity selling. We mm-hmm. haven't quite figured out how to work that into the phraseology where it becomes a bacon and eggs kind of phrase and everybody's talking about it. But if there was one phrase out of the book that I'd like to see a lot of people use, it's serendipity selling, because today the thought of going door to door to see people to try to sell them or cold call in any way is just abhorrent to me, because no matter what you're trying to sell, even if it is add-on pool swimming pool equipment, if it's mm-hmm. thimbles for there is a group of people, like a group of people who collect thimbles, you know, and they're organized and they're together and they're doing this now. If I had a thimble to sell, I certainly would want to be talking to those people. And the way you get involved with those people is you go out and do what I was saying about listen and love. Right. You find out that the person, and an easier way to teach this is the way that you go after a celebrity or a business leader when you're trying to network. Mm-hmm. Those people have causes. They have things they're interested in. Maybe you're trying to sell, let's just say Pepsi Cola, and the head of that corporation is, hard to get to, and there's several layers or whatever. But you can find out that the CEO and the board members have charities that they care about, and then you can go get involved with those charities. And sooner or later, you'll meet the right kind of people, and you'll be talking the right kind of thing, whether they want to rescue dogs or, get water to people in Africa, happens to be my favorite charity, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you find a way to connect there. Well, thank goodness today we have LinkedIn, we have Facebook, and we have personal blogs from these people. We find out what they're interested in, and then listen and love. If somebody writes a blog post about something they're passionate about,
right,
and you've taken the time to read their 3 to 10 paragraphs on a subject, you know what they think. If you agree with them, it's easy to say me too in a comment, But it's much, much better if you take time to write out about the length of a tweet, just a couple of lines that you know, and we all know this. We all went to school and figured out what it takes to make sure that we're, you know, not seen as a spammer, not turning in plagiarized work at school. It means if you really read the book when you're doing a report on it, you dig in and you find something in, you know, chapter six. And if you're reading a blog post, it's so easy because a good blog post is going to say what somebody's passionate about, have a conclusion, recommend something. You're either going to agree or disagree with it. They're going to cite some references. You're going to either be able to add more references to it or clarify a point that they made, or maybe ask a question. Does this apply in all situations of interstate banking? You know, and if you take the time to do that, guess what happens? The same thing happens as when you write a blog post and somebody comments on it. You go, oh boy, I got a comment on my blog.
So in order to be successful in the social media space, there's a mind shift that a business owner or an individual needs to make. How are you helping people make this transition? Are you finding that there are some challenges with some people to help them make this mindset transition?
That's a good question. There are certainly people that would be listening to us speak now, and by this point had already tuned out and said, boy, Penelope's got a real crank or, you know, hippie here where, you know, next he's going to say, let's sing Kumbaya and join hands. I'm not. I'm a direct marketer salesman by trade.
Yes.
I have come to this to find out that, you know, early on in my selling career, I found out that really marketing was what I was doing. And today, you know, unless you're in a good sized business, there's not a marketing department. This, you're selling your marketing. It's the same thing. If you're a realtor and you're just, you know, waiting for the next person to come up to close on a house, boy, you'll starve, right? You've got to market.
Correct.
You know, or in any profession. And I found out, when I was selling that, you know, it was more about listening to what the person wanted. If I listened to a business owner that I was trying to sell, I found out what they wanted. It was pretty easy to connect with them. And I'm talking about 10, 15 minutes. I'm not talking about, you know, go join their charity and work 6 years on it. It's things you can do today and finding that vector to connect on that isn't about, hey, buy my stuff. And if you can keep out of ever having to say, hey, buy my stuff, you're going to do a lot better. Again, I've surveyed large audiences, small audiences. I've asked it on Twitter. Universally, the answer I get, the overwhelming majority, is people do not like to be sold.
Correct.
But we all like to buy stuff.
Correct.
That's the same transaction.
So you did a great interview with Michael Porton. I think it was in that interview where you talked about targeting the right influentials, and you were just addressing that, and I fell victim to this. I think so many of us focus in the wrong direction when we get into all the social media stuff. We start trying to concentrate more on the numbers, the number of followers and friends, et cetera, rather than revenue goals, who our target is, trying to find that influential. Is that really the direction we should go? I mean, how do we how do we transition?
Oh.
If we have, Warren, if we have 10,000 followers, friends, and whatever network.
Mm-hmm.
How do we start over, or do we need to start over?
Don't start over. Use whatever you have, because those people that you're connected with now may or may not respond, and you can find out. Let's say you have 10,000 followers on Twitter, and you put out, you know, today item B is on sale, and nobody responds, and then you put a great quote from Steve Jobs. And I'll give you the secret. If you want to put up quotes, first of all, only put up a famous quote if it's something you believe in and are ready to have a discussion on.
Okay.
But, you know, and so I use quotes. There's a lot of people say, don't use quotes. Well, that's because there's a lot of classes who say people will retweet and respond to quotes. They will. But if you're not engaging with people, it's a numbers game, because you can make the ticker go retweet, that, you know, and count how many retweets you got. Does you no good if you're not having a discussion. But by the way, when you get ready to use some quotes to pepper what you're saying, look to Einstein, Steve Jobs, Eleanor Roosevelt. Those are the biggie. If you quote them, and Oprah, quote anything that put their name on it, and people will notice and they say, oh, I love Oprah. and they want to have a discussion about it. Well, if you love Oprah and they love Oprah, you've got something to talk about. And again, it's not about whether or not they want to buy the house you're selling, or they're ready to sign up for your service, you know, or have their pool clean, or anything that you're selling. It's about whether or not you can connect human to human with that person. Mm-hmm. And so the secret of having these large numbers is that, you know, they don't matter. At the same time, they don't get in the way. And I'll tell you right now, having 100,000 people follow you is not too much different than having 10 or 20. And certainly my response to me asking a question and getting an answer mm-hmm. is the same now as it was back when I had 1,500, 5,000. Somewhere in that range, I started to see it taper off. And then, you know, as I became popular, now I get a lot more people saying, oh, you really wrote a book? They don't know who I am. And I was feeling pretty full of myself somewhere around 20,000 followers on Twitter. And then I saw Guy Kawasaki, who would be somebody I would be emulating. He's been writing business books a lot longer than me. And when I started on Twitter, I could have a conversation with Guy anytime. Right now, Guy really likes Google Plus. And if you use his name and ask him a pertinent question or comment on something that fits into something he cares about, he'll answer you on Google Plus. But the difference was I looked at his followers and I'd be like, oh, gosh. If I did nothing more than try to catch up with Guy by going after his followers, it would take me years to catch up with him.
Correct.
And still there's a lot of people, I know this because I use this example, and people don't know who Guy Kawasaki is. For those who don't, he got known for being the evangelist for Apple back when the Mac came out, and now deals with startups. But if I go outside a community that is paying a lot of attention online or to the startup community, they just don't know who Guy Kawasaki is. You may have read his books, but you don't think of who he is. And so no matter how famous you are, in fact, my friend Mark Victor Hansen, you know, I mean, guy sold 200 million chicken soup books. Mm-hmm. He always introduces himself as co-creator of the chicken soup series because there's a lot of people who don't know who that is. No matter how famous you get, you don't worry about the numbers. You worry about connecting with that person one-on-one.
So is the strategy going out and identifying the right influentials? I mean, you and Michael talked about the influencers or the influential people and coming, you know, whatever number you want, the 20 best list of influential people. Is that really the strategy that we should go after?
The thing is, you want to be conscious of that because let's not forget, we're here for business. We're here for profit.
Correct.
We're not, you know, I don't go on Facebook so that I can play Farmville. And I've never played Farmville, and I really don't have much intention. When somebody says Farmville is a complete waste of time, they should remove it completely from Facebook. Uh-huh. I remind them that there's at least 100 million people who disagree with that. Mm-hmm. And to me, 100 million people is a good-sized market. You know, I haven't figured out what to sell them, so I've stayed off of Farmville so far. But I'm not there to play games. I'm there for business.
Correct.
Now, when I get to the relationship, I do the same thing as if, you know, let's say you and I get together for the first time and we're talking. We may be talking about kids, about dieting, about our last trip to Las Vegas, you know, anything like that, which is pretty much nonsense as far as business is concerned. Mm-hmm. But it certainly was important. You and I had a conversation before this interview. And, you know, it was certainly stuff that I found to be important in my life that we talked about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you get to a conference and you see somebody that you know, you ask them how the flight was or how's the weather when you're talking to somebody in another city. It's not because you need weather conditions in Atlanta. You know, you ask because it's a polite thing to say in a conversation start. So much of human conversation is just this filler that makes us get along and builds rapport. It's not that it's unimportant. It's only important in context of the conversation. So if you say, all I'm going to do is talk to the people that are on the top 20 list, you're missing out because you don't know who those top 20 talk to. So at the same time, you want to be focused and trying to go towards where, you know, if you want to look at somebody to emulate, look at somebody that's in the top 20 and then figure out what are they doing, what are their interests,
correct,
and see if you can emulate that. There's got to be somebody. I can't imagine a list of 20 people who are on social media actively, mm-hmm. whether or not they're blogging or on Facebook or tweeting or looking at their LinkedIn profile, and you can't find something you have in common with them that's outside of just, this is a potential a person to spread my message.
Have you looked at any kind of time that's involved in building these relationships where you take them from building just a connection to trust, to credibility, to eventually moving them into the sales cycle? What kind of time is involved?
Yeah, that's a question I get asked all the time. You know, how much time you spend? First of all, I write books on social media, and I choose to live my life with being very active in that and in my networking and stuff like that. So please don't try to emulate me. In fact, when somebody says, I'm following you on Twitter, I'm going to read all your great things you said, like, please. I mean, I can't imagine me reading all the things I tweet in a day. You know, sometimes that tops 200 tweets. No, please don't do that. I appreciate that you like some of the stuff I say and you repeat it or whatever. Sure. That's all well and good, but it's about reaching people one-on-one. And so mm-hmm. the number that you really have to look at is how long would it take to reach the kind of people that can really boost your career or your business if you weren't using these tools? And then look at the big time reduction.
Correct.
So let's say you want to get very focused and you just want to do the to get those 20 people that actually you really need to get five of them, mm-hmm. but that 20 is on the list. And then the first thing I would do for a client is I would take those 20 names and I'd expand to who are the 20 people each of those listen to. And now I'd have a list of 400.
Okay.
I'd follow them because out of those, half of them aren't going to be active on social media. And then get to the ones that are and find out what they're talking about and how can I reach them. Mm-hmm. I may find high up in a corporation or a celebrity or something like that, and they arrange to buy a first-class plane ticket to sit next to the person on a trip across the country, you know, how many hours of planning and execution does that take?
Yes.
And today, to think that you could do something similar mm-hmm. by finding out that Guy Kawasaki, for instance, there's a thought leader, and this is how I got started in all this. I wanted to reach people like Guy Kawasaki
okay.
back when I was working in publishing. And and I thought that was somebody I wanted to connect with. And so, you know, compared to, you know, going out of my way to be someplace where he was going to be. Mm-hmm. By the way, when I met Guy Kawasaki face-to-face, that's what I did. I was at an event. I didn't have a ticket to the seminar. I borrowed someone's badge and barged into a Twitter session so that I would be there when it was over and I got to talk to Guy.
Right.
And so it doesn't mean we don't still do those kind of things, but if you want to talk to Guy Kawasaki, it's a lot easier to go follow him on or put him in your circle on Google+, find out what he's talking about, and then, the guy talks about 40 things in a week. One of those will be something that you can get into a conversation on. And he may answer, well, that's good. I mean, I tend to say funny things, and I get those kind of people say that's funny. And, you know, just when I think it's not working, I'll get two famous people that I know that I've, you know, hung out with or spoke on the same stage, but I consider them people that are still levels above me as far as, you know, income from speaking or notoriety or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying really hard not to drop names, but let's say recently I talked to one of those people and the other one retweeted it and said, yes, that Warren's a heck of a nice guy or something like that. No great compliment, but boy, made my day to think that there are those people. I had no idea the second guy, the bigger name of the two, mm-hmm. was even listening. And so you just don't know where it's going to go.
Correct.
And I think this conversation wouldn't be complete without mentioning Conan O'Brien, who, you know, when he went through his switches of networks and whatnot a couple of years ago,
uh-huh.
decided to get on Twitter, and now very active social media team with him, the Team Coco, I think they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing he did back then was he wasn't following anybody on Twitter. And so they randomly picked a person, or they said it was random. We don't know. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
Picked one person and he followed her. Well, and then you could go to, and I have no idea whether this is still true, it's a couple-year-old story, but when he followed that person, he, with his couple of million followers, they all go to his profile page and look, and they say he's got one person he follows. Had there been no publicity or interviews or talking about it at all, which is how I found out, just the the people that were following would sooner or later, you know, say, well, who is this? And sure enough, as soon as he followed that person, you know, she shot up in popularity. If your one follower is Conan O'Brien, you're doing pretty good. And so you really don't know.
Okay.
And that gets back to the idea of the serendipity. If you focus on, by the way, if you can get, you know, if you can get Donald Trump on the phone tomorrow and get on TV with him, do it. But in the meantime, you know, find out the 400 people that are closest to Donald and get to know them.
Warren, we're going to take a quick break, just a few more questions. And when we come back, I'd like to just hear a few thoughts on social media and how to brand your business on social media. We'll be right back. Stick around.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back. We're here with our guest, Warren Whitlock. Talk a little bit about branding yourself, branding your business on social media.
First of all, I'll quote Dr. Ben Mack, who defines branding as being the relationship with the customer. Quite often when we talk about branding, we're talking about having, you know, the right colors on a logo, and not that this stuff isn't important too, but you know, and making sure your Facebook profile looks in a certain way or does a certain thing. But really though, what it boils down to is that relationship with the customer. And you know, end of the day, I say my life philosophy now is that you can sum up everything as being a your connections and relationships that go with the connection, and then telling stories. And you build relationships by sharing stories. I've shared a few stories here today. At the end of this, at the end of this interview, we'll both have a new story to add to our repertoire about having spoke together today. And you know, one more thing that we might bring up or might not, you know, and actually I said a couple of things I don't normally say in interviews, and I'm going to say, you know, Penelope did a great job because you got me talking about Disney. You know, I can't remember ever bringing up Disney in a conversation for years. And so, you know, and it might be, I'll remember that day where it came from. It really gets into the stuff like, I love the movie Inception, the idea of it. The whole thing about taking drugs and going deep in dreams or whatever there, the plot of the movie, no. But the concept of every idea that we have comes from one point of inception. And when you think about it, every person you meet, every relationship you start, everything that happens, every story has a beginning and an end. There's, you know, and that's what we have, and that's how we put together the memories that we have of our life. And, you know, I've gotten to be kind of philosophical in my old age of having ups and downs. And I'll just say real estate in the last 5 years in Las Vegas, and everybody will know what I'm talking about. And I got very philosophical about it because I'm not starving to death, you know, but, you know, there certainly were some losses. And I started looking at the crash and saying, wow, you know, all I've got is a new story to tell. If I wake up tomorrow and I'm not dead, you know, I've got a new story to tell. That story may include, you know, horrible things happen and maybe wonderful things happen. I prefer the latter. And I also prefer love over lack of love. You know, I don't want to say hate because I don't think of hate as being the opposite of love because there's passion there too. But to have a day happen and not have something interesting to talk about, something life-affirming, life-changing in the day to go through, have the same day today as I had yesterday is not appealing at all to me. And with that life philosophy, I look at what's profitable and I say that getting to know more people and involving them in what you're doing, that's how movements are started. And it always starts at some point of inception. So if you're looking at growing a business and you've got a family to feed and bills to pay, yes, by all means, you've got to do something to set up to make that those transactions happen. Once you do, once you figure it out that I'm going to sell widget B for X number of dollars and I need to sell, you know, 47 of them today to not starve to death. Once you got that equation set up, The rest, the math is pretty simple. You need to talk to more people that want, that are interested in buying it than are going to buy it, because there's going to be some loss there.
Correct.
And you need to reach out to as many people as possible. And, you know, I've done a lot of work with authors, and I lost count of how many times I've helped somebody just take a book from nothing to being a bestseller. You know, it's just like a formula. We know that it works.
Uh-huh.
And what I learned from them and from the 99 out of 100, they all are the same. Everything that they've written a book, mm-hmm. they really care about it.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, I find somebody who says they're in business just to make money. They don't care about people. They're just here to make money, and they figured out this was a good way to trick people. And I run the other direction.
Right.
But most people are doing something because it's a passion that goes beyond just, can I get paid to do this? And when you're in that kind of a frame of reference, we all want the same thing. We want more people to know about what we find to be important,
right.
and to spread the news about it. If we focus on my message is important, please help me, instead of everybody else has got a message, can I help them? If we're so self-centered, which we all do, I mean, we're all selfish at some point. You know, we're all thinking like, I need this because I've got to pay my bills today. We let go of the idea of trying to help other people. When you can let go of I've got to make my nut today, mm-hmm. and start helping other people, mm-hmm. you're going to find a whole lot more people that are anxious to buy from you than there were ever people that you could possibly sell.
That's so true.
So I promise to tell you the secret to selling stuff on Twitter. You still want me to tell you?
Yes. Are you kidding? Of course. Well, I've got my pen in hand. recording machine going.
All right. And you've got the recording going. And just make sure everybody take this down. The secret to selling stuff on Twitter.
Okay.
Stop trying to sell stuff on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's where you meet people. I'm not saying the transaction can't happen on Twitter, because of Twitter. I've had it happen to me any number of times.
Right.
But when somebody asks me a question on Twitter, I answer the question. If they ask me a question about where to find sushi in Cincinnati, I can answer that question. I can't answer all of those questions. So I don't go looking to answer questions about sushi in Cincinnati, because A, I don't like sushi, and B, I've never been to Cincinnati. So it's not something I'm going to choose to talk about, but I've done it, and I know that one in particular works. I've known that if I'm on an interview and I get asked and I use the sushi in Cincinnati, and I don't mention that I don't like sushi,
mm-hmm.
somebody will send me a tweet and recommend a place in Cincinnati where I can get sushi. It was really weird one time when I got like five off one interview, and I said, okay, never again. Always explain to people I'm not looking for sushi in Cincinnati, because there are people out there who care about a good sushi place in Cincinnati. You know, I'm just not one of them. It doesn't matter. Uh-huh. When I do that, I'm helpful in that way. They can see that I'm helpful, which is much more important than whether or not I've got widgets for sale today.
We're running out of time, but what are the specific Twitter tactics that you have found to be most successful?
Okay, I'm going to give you one thing you can do right now.
Okay.
There's keywords for what people searching for your product and service are looking for.
Correct.
Let's say you are a sushi restaurant in Cincinnati.
Correct.
You could go to the search engine in Twitter, which is like, you know, unparalleled to anything except for maybe Google.
Uh-huh.
And using their search, and they have an advanced search. When you get to their search, you
right.
go to search.com, or, you know, from the search results, drop down into the advanced search or whatever like that. Get to the place where they have the form. And it's just like any good search engine.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose a specific geographical area. You can choose tweets that come from a certain person or to a certain person. You can put negative, that's just a minus sign in front of the word. All sorts of things you do.
Right.
And you can just sushi in Cincinnati. You maybe find out that, you know, somebody made a joke about sushi in Cincinnati and it got tweeted a lot, and that's not going to be helpful to you. Or there's somebody, your competing restaurant is tweeting every 15 minutes, come to our sushi restaurant. We have good sushi. And you don't want to get that. And there's
right.
ways you can block those in the search. But it's not about finding those. It's about finding the person that has a question or is a new person and wants to know about something. So add one more character and you change the way the search works. So let's say it's Sushi Cincinnati, mm-hmm. and then those are separated by a space, and you put one more space, mm-hmm. and then you put a question mark. And that question mark will give you only tweets where somebody asks a question. So if you'd like to find it every time somebody says, where can I find good sushi in Cincinnati, mm-hmm. or a similar question to that, that's how you would find them. Now, I'm guessing, it's been a long time since I searched sushi in Cincinnati, but every time I've ever searched, there were results. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that if you're not going to find just a, people standing in line, on Twitter begging to buy more sushi, but you are going to find people that are looking for good places to eat or sushi or some other kind of vector. Mm-hmm. Or as I said, it may be somebody asking about, how to clean their pool or whatever, something else you know about, and you become the helpful person that helps there. A typical thing we see in Las Vegas is we've got some well-trained people doing the social media and, Twitter there, and somebody will say, I'm standing in a long line at this, to check in at this hotel. Now, you could go on and say, come over here, we've got rooms available now. And that's mm-hmm. what you would expect. Mm-hmm. But the advanced technique, and the one I'm going to tell you all to do, is what somebody did at, I believe this was the Rio, and their answer to somebody, sorry to hear the lines are so long, hope you have a fabulous time in Las Vegas, something like that, right?
Okay.
Just a standard, sure. have a nice day kind of greeting.
Sure.
Maybe a little bit personalized because the person, a human being, had read the message. Well, the story that I heard was that the person who got that tweet uh-huh. came back to Las Vegas 3 months later, stayed at the Rio, and then recommended to a family of four that they come and have their reunion at another property that's in that same group.
Sure.
Something like $10,000 in sales came out because somebody, instead of saying, hey, because you've got a reservation, you're standing in line. You go try to pick off that reservation, you're being a competitor. Come buy from me, I'm 2 cents
sure.
less. Sure. If you forget about trying to sell and you become really helpful, that's going to pay off.
That's
and
great.
Remember, one thing I didn't mention about serendipity,
uh-huh.
you can afford to send 20 tweets for nothing. And if you'll go to your keyword and you'll look at the results page, it's going to be about 20 people on a page.
Mm-hmm.
You probably won't find more than one or two that are worth answering. The time to read those, skim through those 20 is going to be, seconds. To answer one or two of them is only going to be a few seconds more. And in a minute or two, you've done that. And you do that every time you get a chance or on a regular schedule or have somebody do it or whatever you have to do to get that done, you're going to start some conversation. I'm currently having a conversation about chocolate with somebody that works at one of the Las Vegas resorts.
Okay.
I still don't really know why, but I have a feeling that sooner or later,
uh-huh.
Because we've had several conversations, sooner or later we're going to find out what the answer is to that. And who knows, I may be buying a bath of chocolate at a resort spa, but either that or somebody following me might be.
So what's your device that you use to monitor all your social media? And I'll end with this last question, and it kind of goes into, I've had a few people on the show that have asked about how do we monitor the mass broadcast and what tool can we use to monitor all the mass broadcasting. And they're using Hootsuite, but they're looking for a better tool. Is there a tool that you're using?
Yeah, Hootsuite is fantastic. I use Hootsuite every day. I haven't used TweetDeck in some time. There's some better analytical tools, especially if you have a team of people working on it.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, that's when it pays to hire a professional and review some things and try some things, because there are tools that can cost you a few hundred dollars a month, and there's tools that can cost you $5,000 a month and are worth it if you have that much to analyze and that many different people to do. One thing for sure, though, is make the decision whatever it takes. This is what the future is all about. My favorite company for what the future is going to be in the listen and love world is the company that their slogan is delivering happiness, and that's Zappos. And Tony Hsieh, his book is called Delivering Happiness. When you talk about his culture and his principles of how he runs his company,
mm-hmm.
it's not about how to sell more shoes.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how to make people happy with the transaction.
I like that.
And follow what they're doing. And I swear 10 years from now, everybody's going to be doing business like that.
Uh-huh.
And if you're trying to figure out how you can pick up on some transactions in the meantime, you're going to be left in the dust as your competitor figures out how to do this. I really like Twitter search. I like Google Alerts, because every time a name or something is mentioned, you can get an alert sent in your email. But the idea is, and the reason I bring up Tony is he, I went to visit years ago. I've known Tony for, she's going on 5 years now, but I went out and did the tour like 3 years ago out at Zappos. I highly recommend it. If you come into Las Vegas, you got to go on the tour. Okay. And it's a call center, and on the surface, there's nothing I can tell you about it. But it's like, you know, it's like if I said, go see the Grand Canyon, and your response was, isn't it just a big hole in the ground? When you see it, it's a different experience. And that's the way it is with Zappos. And here's what I got out of this the last time I went several months ago was that they showed you the area where the people sit that answer Tony's email, because he's gotten famous, sold the company to Amazon, and, you know, and Tony still just has a cubicle with everybody else, but, you know, he's there less often, and, you know, it's become, he has six full-time people to answer his email. If you send an email to B. Gates at Microsoft, right, somebody will read it. The last I heard was, I said, is it still okay for me to say somebody answers all of Bill Gates' email? And they said, well, maybe don't say answer. Somebody reads all of it. And decides what really needs to get on to the CEO or whatever. I'm saying that, you know, a listener to this program, no excuse, you know, unless you're at least that big, don't start thinking, yeah, Donald Trump doesn't answer all his own email, but if he's smart, he has somebody reading it all.
Okay.
And I don't know about Donald Trump, but I'm just trying to think, you know, Oprah, all of the celebrities, you know, if they're in contact with their, if you have broadcast and you're on TV every day, well, you can talk to everybody every day. If you don't have millions of people listening to you daily, then, well, like Penelope does, you gotta try to answer every time. And on my radio show, if you leave a comment or you find my Twitter handle and talk to me, I'm going to answer. Literally anybody that writes to me at Warren Whitlock on Twitter, I'm going to answer your question. And I like that you answer the questions that we used to call those dumb questions that we have to put in the frequently asked questions column. No, I like those, because every time I, you know, answer with what the store hours are, number one, I know that's somebody with buying intention. Number two, I don't have a store, but that's an example.
Sure.
But if somebody asks for your store hours, that's somebody who has something, and then you can give them a personalized response, because now it only takes a couple of seconds and they get a personal response and you start a relationship with that person. And wouldn't it be cool, and this is a prediction for the future, if you walk into the grocery store and instead of scanning your key rings to see what discount you get on the way out, they scanned that on the way in, and they knew, because in every corner grocery store there are 50 top customers, and if the manager knew who they were, it would make sense for him to go out and shake their hand and thank them. Wouldn't take very much. I don't want to be bothered when I'm buying groceries, but, you know, just something special. Instead of putting out the same coupons and treating everybody exactly the same, if you were able to identify those people, the technology is coming around for us to do that. Right. What we have to change is our paradigm of how we look at it, that it is possible to reach every single person. And and it's not, can we reach them with a message as much as can we reach them to let them know that we're listening.
You're a special person, Warren. Listen and love is the business strategy for the future, isn't it?
Listen and love. Yeah, I think so.
I like that. Warren Whitlock, you're special. Thank you so much for being our guest today and sharing insight into social media and building profitable relationships in the social space. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And for my audience, if you want to connect with Warren Whitlock, he's definitely very accessible. One starting point is to go to his site, which is profitablesocialmedia.com. Is that correct, Warren?
That is. Profitable Social Media.
And if you want to learn how to profit the right way using social media, Warren's books are both available on Amazon. Book number one, Twitter Revolution, How Social Media and Mobile Marketing is Changing the Way We Do Business and Market Online. And a second book, Profitable Social Media, Business Results Without Playing Games. Do you have any speaking engagements coming up? Any additional speaking engagements coming up we should know about?
Nothing too big. I speak at a lot of the big shows because they're all the big trade shows are now starting to see that they need social media. So it's usually in a social media section with them. But that's breaking out to where you're probably seeing more keynotes. But the best place to find out about that would be on ProfitableSocialMedia.com. And you find my blog as part of there. That's where I blog myself.
Sure.
And then, of course, if you got a question, boy, I'd love to somebody say, where are you next going to appear on Twitter? Because I'll answer every single time somebody asks that one.
Excellent. You're a phenomenal resource for the industry. Thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
And if you want to connect further with Warren, you can access his guest bio along with his links and along with his book links. They will be archived here on fmgradio.com and also on my official site at PenelopeCoxShow.com. Be sure to join me at the same time next week. My guest is going to be Cindy Schultzen, and Cindy and I are going to be talking about a subject that actually is very dear to me and helped me form my entire core foundation to my online business. Cindy and I will be talking about finding your passion, finding your niche, so you can get clarity on who your target market is and who your ideal client is. The Penelope Cox Show airs every Thursday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, right here on fmgradio.com. Thanks a lot for joining us today. Remember, invest in your education, learn from the best.
You've been listening to The Penelope Cox Show, The Educator Connector. All showtimes, guest files, and interviews are archived on Penelope's official site at penelopecoxshow.com.